Brandable Insider Podcast. My name is Keith DeBoer, and I'm a domain industry writer and investor. And I'm here to give you the insider scoop on how to buy and sell brandable domain names. But first, a message from our sponsor.
The Brand Bucket Marketplace has helped thousands of domainers turn their assets into cash. You get maximum exposure, and since it's only a dollar to submit a domain for review, it's a no-brainer. Sign up at brandbucket.com/sell, and you can submit your first 10 domain names for free.
All right, without further delay, let's jump right in. My special guest today is the founder and owner of Legal Brand Marketing. He's an angel investor for a few dozen companies, and has been the presenter and moderator at dozens of domain industry conferences in the US, Europe, and Asia. He's also the owner of ultra premium domains like Pineapple, Beard, Left, and Vaccinate.com with five of the top 100 sales of 2020. Welcome to the show, Braden Pollack.
Well, thank you. I wish I had a radio voice like you do, but I know that I don't, because oftentimes when I'm on the phone with somebody, they say, yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
So I know I can't compete with you, but I'll...
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to edit in some big sound of a crowd applauding you after each time you answer a question.
Perfect. Bill Maher does that. He was doing that when he was recording from home. You said I have five of the top 100. Is that true? That's great. I actually, the funny thing is, I sold recognize.com, and I can't report the price, unfortunately, which is the first name that I've sold that is not public. But I can tell you that it would be in the top three or four.
You can tell us that it would be in the top three or four of the 100 or your sales for the year?
For the year. Top 100 for the year.
Oh, out of all sales. Wow.
This year. Yeah, yeah. Not all
nice
sales
sale.
Ever. just this year it'd be the top few. But unfortunately, I can't release it. I mean, I can share that, but that's all.
So, but usually, as you said, this is kind of a first for you, because usually, I mean, almost always, you insist when you close a deal.
Yeah.
You usually insist that you can speak about the transaction.
Yes. I have always done that. I did this deal, and there was no discussion of any kind of NDA. We did the deal, no contract. I've actually sold this guy names in the past. And it's just coincidental that he happened to reach out to me for this name. He didn't know it was mine. He just kind of sent an inquiry, and I sent him a text. I'm like, did you just inquire about recognize.com? So he's got some partners that feel that the price was... not too high. It's just that it's the price is more than their salaries. And he just felt like they're not going to like it. And he doesn't want to ruffle any feathers. And we literally don't have anything in writing. But I've sold him for his previous companies. I've sold him several dozen names in the past. And, you know, plenty of trust. I mean, I pushed the name to him, and, you know, without him, without any agreements, and he, you know, wired the money a couple of days later. So I have that kind of relationship with him. And I had said afterwards, by the way, I just want to make sure you're okay with me publicly announcing this. And he said, please don't. He's like, if you want to talk to your buddies about it, I don't care. Just don't do anything public, because my partners, they're not going to like it. So, unfortunately, and I do have to respect that the deal was already done. And I wasn't going to, you know, piss him off by saying, too bad we don't have anything in writing, because that's not the kind of relationship I have with the guy.
Right.
So I had to honor his request. You know, I will work with him again in the future. I've worked with him for years. And so unfortunately I have to honor that. So.
Okay. Well, we'll let you off the hook here, Braden. You can do it once in a while, but don't make a habit of it.
I have had a pretty good record of
you do.
Yeah. of not having names under NDA. So.
Yeah, I was really, really surprised when you said it might have been on one of the domain socials that you make a point of bringing that up in the negotiations or, you know, in as part of the final deal, that it's really a, it's not something you prefer. It's something that you normally insist on almost.
I insist on it. And if this was just a one-off, it was just some guy, I would have been like, you know what? You should have requested that before. Right. And you didn't. And therefore, you know, this is what I do. But under these circumstances, and honestly, I can't think of another person that I would have had this kind of deal with. But under the circumstances, I've sold this guy, you know, seven figures worth of names over the years, and I'll continue to work with him. And so, you know, I'm not going to stick it to him.
Yeah. I mean, it's a no-brainer. Yeah, I think everybody understands that. As long as we're talking about this sale, recognition.com, tell us, you want to tell us anything else about it?
Recognize.com.
You want to tell us about anything about acquisition or anything like that, or how long you had it, or?
You're not going to put this in the subtitle?
The description. Yeah, right. Description. No, yeah, nothing will be in writing.
Just leave that description. So I bought it at the NamesCon auction, live auction, 3.5 years ago.
Okay.
So this upcoming January will be 4 years. But I sold a few months ago. So it's been, so I had it for about 3.5 years. It's public. I paid $17,000 for it, which is kind of surprising considering, you know, I was sitting there literally between Adam Strong was on my right, Amar was on my left, Drew was in the room, Frank was in the room, all the other buyers are in the room, Elliot, everybody else that buys Wilmer.com, they were there.
They were there.
I was shocked, frankly, that I got it that cheap.
And were they in the bidding?
I don't recall who was bidding on that name. I think I was just flabbergasted that it closed at 17, but I don't remember who else was bidding on it.
So were you towards the end? Was it one-on-one, you and someone else going back and forth for a while, or?
I honestly don't remember.
Don't remember. Okay. But you were surprised you got it.
I was surprised I got
that price.
I would have gone much higher.
How high would you have gone?
I'm not sure. You know, probably close to 100. Just because of the technology that's coming out related to image recognition and product recognition.
Exactly.
That's what I saw in it. And actually, I remember talking to people that day about the name, and they're like, "Well, I don't see what why would you spend that much?" And I said, you know, because of product recognition and image recognition. And they're like, "Oh yeah, I hadn't thought of that." but today, you know, I spend much more now on names than I did then, because, you know, the names that were $20,000-$30,000 a few years ago are $100,000 today wholesale.
Right.
So I'm spending a lot more on names today than I was then. But I do remember that I would have spent much more on that I really wanted that name.
So you would have gone as high as 100K, but what were you thinking you would likely spend on it, that it would go for?
I can't really say. I've negotiated for a zillion names between them.
Right.
Now, so I don't remember those specifics.
Right.
I do remember that I really wanted that name, and I would have gone much higher, and I was surprised that it went that low. But I don't recall, you know, what my limit was on that.
And is this end user that bought it, this gentleman you've, you know, done multiple deals with, is he going to put it to use in the way that you envisioned?
No, not at all. And the funny thing is, there was coincidentally another person that had inquired the same time, and he offered me $500,000 for the name. I did not sell it to him.
Okay. This deal was for a higher price than that.
I didn't say that.
Okay.
Just that I didn't sell it to the guy who offered me $500,000.
Okay. Okay.
But that guy was in the what's called the recognition business, so trophies and plaques. And the guy I sold it to is starting a PE firm, a private equity firm.
Okay.
And I just assumed that the recognition business, no one would offer me enough money from that space. Because how much money can you make selling trophies and plaques?
Right.
But apparently this guy, you know, he had the budget. And then the PE firm was just kind of out of the blue. He's using it more of like, you know, recognizing deals kind of thing. But I, you know, I assumed to go into the image recognition industry, but you know, it is what it is.
your baby didn't grow up to be what you expected.
Look, it didn't. I mean, I had a big price tag on it. My price tag was 1.2. I was shooting the moon for, you know, on that name, waiting for that company to come around with that technology. Technology is not here yet, in the way that I know it will be, I shouldn't say no, but the way I assume it will be. And so the question was, and this is what I had to ask myself, do I want to pass on this, on the cash today, right, and wait for that much bigger offer, which might be 5 years from now?
Right.
Or do I want to take my chips off the table and then reinvest that money, which ultimately I did. And that's kind of the question that I have to ask myself all the time.
Exactly.
Because there are, you know, I get six-figure offers all the time on my names, and it's hard to turn, you know, it's hard to turn those numbers down. Right. Yeah. I just turned down, Wednesday,
yeah.
On Friday, I got an offer through a broker, a legitimate offer, $175,000 for snowball.com, which I turned down, and that was not, you know, not high enough. I'm asking $400,000. But, you know, if the offer was, let's say, $275,000, right, or $300,000, then it gets into that place where, it's lower than I want, but I can reinvest that name, buy a few more. And, you know, 175 isn't there, but I don't know. I'd have to start questioning it at 275 or 300. Because, you know, when's the next big offer going to come around?
Right.
And there have been offers as I've turned down that, you know, 5 years ago that in retrospect, I wish I would have taken, because I could have done a lot more with that money 5 years ago. And I think everyone has to remember that when you put a price on a name, you know, is that the name? Is it worth holding on to? Because you're going to get a much bigger number. But if you do, how long is that going to take? And it's not guaranteed. So, you know, it is a tough one for every investor. We all go through this.
Yes, for sure. I think for those of us that are domaining, you know, either new to the industry or domaining at lower levels, you know, say in the 2 to 5 or even 10K range, we don't have, well, there's always offers, you know, even on smaller domains, but we don't have to wrestle with that as much. And I know, I think that newer people tend to think that, well, these other guys that bought these names years ago, they're so lucky because they got these, you know, great deals and great names. And all they had to do was, this is the important part, all they had to do was sit around for 10 or 15 or 20 years and then sell them for multi-millions. But the reality is that in between, they had to do a lot. They had to turn down a lot of very lucrative offers.
Yeah. And they also had to have the foresight. So what we talk about today, when we see a name that's, you know, pick a number, oneword.com, it's $100,000. You know, is that too much wholesale? a lot of people are passing on those prices, right? Because it's a lot of money.
Right.
But what is that name worth in 5 years? In 5 years, people are going to say, oh my God, that was a steal at 100 grand. Jesus, you know, I'd pay 200 for that today. And so, you know, do we have the same, are we on the same trajectory? I don't know. But I can tell you that that names that I spend $100,000 on today wholesale, I was buying the same quality names not even 5 years ago at 30.
Right.
I mean, like recognize.com is a good example. That was less than 4 years ago. It was 3.5 years, 17,000 up to many multiples of that.
Right. And what would that go for now if it was on the aftermarket, red auction, do you think?
It would probably be if it was wholesale, you know, if it was a broker, probably around 100 grand would be my guess, maybe 150. If it was on an auction, you know, maybe 75. I see names selling for, on GoDaddy, I just bought detour.com for 65.
Yep. Now I noticed, on detour.com that you paid $65,006 according to name bio.
Yes.
What's with the $6?
never been an even number.
Oh, okay.
Strobe.com, I just picked up. I was actually in the GoDaddy auction for Strobe and somebody else outbid me. And then I bought it from that guy. That was 51,000. I mentioned these cause they're public anyway.
Right.
The private purchases. I don't talk about the price, but, you know, the Walmart.coms are kind of going for mid five figures. When brokers have them, they're usually more than that. But you know, sometimes I pick up those deals. Sometimes they're higher five figures. You know, it depends on the platform, you know, for Recognize, who's to say, but you know, it's also a different time. It's been 3.5 years and a lot has happened in 3.5 years.
So talk about this point about not bidding on an even number. I've also, another thing that I do when I bid in auctions is I recognize, and I think this is should be obvious, but maybe I think a lot of domainers don't recognize it, is that bidding usually ends at certain pain points, just beyond a certain pain point. You know, 500, 5,000, 10,000, you know, 100, whatever it is. And in this case, yours, for example, Detour ended at just $6 over 65K.
Yeah.
Because there are psychological barriers, these numbers.
Yes. There
talk are. About that.
So let's talk about Strobe. So 50,000 is the psychological barrier, right?
Right.
The auction at 51.
Right.
And I don't think I have to explain that any further, right? You mentioned it. There's a psychological barrier, so you want to bid above that barrier.
Right. Okay. But yeah, you have to consciously do that because the barrier is there for you also. It's there on both sides of the equation.
Sure.
We all have it.
Sure.
So you have to have the kahunas to step beyond it and hope that the other, you know, man or woman on the other side of the equation doesn't.
You know what it always makes me scratch my head is when I see someone bid like $980, just under that psychological barrier. Like anybody that's going to bid $980, like you're guaranteed to lose that.
Right.
Right. Because you have a big psychological barrier at 1,000.
Yep.
Right. So, I mean, if it's inching up at $50 at a time or something, yeah. I mean, 980 can be 900 and 950, except, you know, it's not going to be 1,000 ever. Right.
Right.
So why would you bid just under that barrier? Like that's a recipe to lose.
Right.
It's just, I don't understand people that do that. It's like when you price something retail at, $998 or something, right? Because psychologically it's not $1,000, right? So that is like the oldest trick in the book.
Right.
Right. It's just, you know, price it a penny under, a couple dollars under. When people make offers for, they make like a $999 offer on a name. This is somebody that like just has absolutely no clue about purchasing something, because why would you make an offer to buy somebody's name at just under that psychological barrier? Right.
Right.
Because now it seems as the seller, you're like, I don't want only 900. Some, like, I don't want three figures. I want four. You know, it's just so dumb. just scratch my head whenever I see stuff like that. It drives me crazy.
Now, also, there's a tendency for people to bid and negotiate in round numbers, like, you know, 500 or 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 or whatever. Yeah. Do you do that also, or do you try to avoid that as well?
When I price my names, typically I price just under. Right. So
okay.
349,000 or something like that. You know, 999 or some number. Particularly at the lower end. If I've got a $10,000 name, I'm gonna list it at $99.98. Because it does look better and it seems a lot cheaper than $10,000.
Yep.
When I'm negotiating with somebody, I mean, I will kind of talk about that. I'll use those numbers when I'm trying to buy. Of course I don't, right? Because you're on the opposite side when you're trying to buy. So you want to round up because it looks like you're offering more.
Right.
So
if you, but say you're in a negotiation, you anchor, you know, you're asking 1.2 and they come in at, you know, 500. So everybody's at round numbers to begin. But then when you counter, do you try to say, okay, you know, you counter at 875 or 8, you know, 66 or something, or do you still stick to round numbers? For a while.
I mean, I think it depends. If it's a big number, and I'm talking to a sophisticated buyer, then I'm, you know, particularly if it's, you know, if I'm at 1.2, then it's like, you know, I'll come into the high six figures or something like that, right? So the psychological barrier is that $1 million mark, and so I need to come down into that $1 million mark. It's actually the same with employees. If I've got an employee that, you know, I'm giving them a raise, and the typical raise would put them at like, you know, $95,000 a year. I don't. Like, I give them 100, right? When you get close to that, because it psychologically, that employee will feel a lot better about their salary if they're now making six figures versus, you know, high five figures.
Right.
So I do the same kind of thing. I've had this conversation a number of times with employees when they're just about there, you know, let's say they're making $85,000 a year and it's time for a raise and they want 10,000, I give them 50 and you know, their face lights up, not because of the 5,000, but because now they make 100 grand a year.
Right.
You know, it's a significant thing, that psychological, it's not really a barrier in this case, but you understand what I'm saying, right?
It's a goal in this case. Yeah, in the case of the salary. Yeah, it's a goal. It's a milestone.
It's a milestone, right.
It's huge for them, yeah.
Yeah. So if I'm negotiating to sell a name and I'm at 1.2, then it's about, you know, high six figures. And we don't even, at that point, I won't even talk specific numbers yet, unless I'm really trying to set expectations, you know, really trying to anchor at, look, this is a seven-figure number. I'm really trying to stick to above seven figures.
Right.
But if I'm not, then I'll say, you know, maybe I can get you into the high six figures, you know, that kind of thing. Because you kind of have to figure out where their budget is. You know, because I've got, you know, I get offers literally every day. And you know, some high, some low, most offers are low, but you know, if I'm asking whatever, $150,000 for a name and their budget is 10,000, like, we're not even close. So I don't want to start negotiating from that $150,000 number if they're thinking 10,000. Here's an example. So 2 days ago, I have a $250,000 name. The guy wants to negotiate with me, and I want to figure out where his budget is. So I didn't offer anything other than, you know, maybe I can help you with financing. You know, give me a number. Like, what's your budget? His budget was 10 grand. And I'm like, we're not even close. So I didn't engage and go back and forth with him because it would have been a total waste of time. Right? If he's at one, he's trying to negotiate from 150. What am I? I'm going to try to anchor him at 140 or 125 or what? Or sorry, 250. You know, there's no sense in me trying to come down from 250 when he's at 10.
Right.
The whole thing is fruitless.
Right.
So once I figured out where his budget was, I moved on. Best of luck to you.
Right. So for you, negotiation is a lot more than just going back and forth on a number.
Well, I mean, there's certainly psychology to it. And there are ways to save time, and there are ways to waste time. There are ways to insult your buyer and make them go away and never come back when there could be a deal to be had. Because I have financed lots of names, particularly when it relates to a startup. Well, there's that and big companies. Big companies you might have to finance as well. And most people don't realize this, so it's actually worth discussing. You might have a multi-million or multi-billion dollar company that wants your name that is whatever, a few hundred thousand dollars. And you think they can write this check in a second. It's a rounding error for them.
Right.
It's not true. It's not Google writing a check who can write a check for anything, right? It's that department's advertising budget.
Exactly.
And they only have so much budget for that quarter, and that's it, right? So if you offer a financing plan, it's less about the financing and more about they need to spread it out over several quarters just so they can buy it. Otherwise, they don't have the budget.
Right.
And so that's the way you talk to these corporate buyers, is you say, and if they say, look, we can't spend 250, and you can say, what if we spread it out over the next couple of quarters? And then it's doable for them. Maybe. I mean, there might be some other issues as it relates to logistics and ownership and that kind of thing. But maybe not. But that's how they need to spread out the money, just because they can't. They just don't have the budget to write the check. I lost my train of thought as far as financing and lease. Oh, losing a deal. If someone can afford it, finance it for them. Yeah. Or lease it. I mean, I've turned a couple of deals into leasing. So that works too.
At FT.com, you can increase your domain name sales and make managing your portfolio a breeze. FT provides custom for sale landing pages and secure integration with escrow.com, Dan, and PayPal. So stop paying commissions and maximize your sales at FT.com.
My takeaway from listening to this is that I think less experienced negotiators make it all about the number. What I see a lot of domainers doing is just making it all about the number. It's just a number going back and forth. They anchor and then they go, okay, now I'll pay this and I'll take this. And they end up in the middle 90% of the time. But I think a more experienced and successful negotiator like you realizes that there's a lot more texture to negotiating and there's a lot more conversation to be had. And I think a lot of less experienced negotiators might say, okay, like maybe the two sides anchor, and then the domain owner says, okay, well, what's your budget? They're not going to get a proper answer to that question, right? No one's really going to, or even if the person comes back and says, well, my budget is what my offer is, the domain owner is probably not going to believe them, or should they believe
them? Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a possibility, but it's not, you're right that it's not always about price. Because there's a lot of other factors. I had a name years ago that I wanted $200,000 for. The guy didn't have the budget. And he said he'd lease it for me for $5,000 a month. He ended up leasing that name for 5 years. Do that math. 5 years. And then And then he missed some payments at the end, and I ended up taking the name back. And he, I mean, he gave, you know, we had a decent conversation and we talked it out. And so he's like, I just can't afford the $5,000 anymore. And I let him slide for a while. He made some short payments, and then he had to give up the name. And I said, look, you know, you're doing me some money. He's like, I don't have it. So I get that. So what I'm willing to do is forgive the money that you owe me, but I want your website files and I want your client files.
Right.
You give me those things and I'll forgive everything you owe me. And so he did. And that, so I took the domain back and his website, and it still generates $2,500 a month. And it's been like a year and a half or 2 years since I did that deal. So, you know, that domain has now generated over $300,000 on a name that I would have sold for $200.
Right.
So if I would have stuck to, no, it's $200,000, forget it, I would have lost all that revenue. There's a name that monopolize.com. It's not a fantastic name, but I paid like $1,600 for it. So cheap enough. A guy's leasing it for me for $300 and some a month. Forever, right? I mean, he built his business on it. He's going to have to keep paying me. It's not a big, I didn't want to do it initially because it's not a big enough number, but I set it up at Epic. They bang his credit card every month, so I don't have to do anything. You know, and it paid for itself in the first few months, and it's been like 2 years, year and a half, something like that. So there are plenty of deals to be had by financing and leasing. Gravity.net, I sold for $35,000. They didn't have it all up front. And I said, look, I ended up getting more because of interest. It was $35,000 was the price. They wanted to finance it. I added an interest plan because I prefer they pay it off sooner rather than later. I said, how much do you want to give me down, and how many months do you want? You tell me what works for your budget. And I'll probably say yes, just as long as it's reasonable. And I'd have to look it up, but it was something like $20,000 down or $15,000 down. He ended up paying it out in 4 months. He paid it off. And I think he offered me 10% a month in interest. It was like $38,500 is what I ended up selling it for. And it took 4 months. Frankly, that was better than $35,000. I got an extra 10%.
Yeah.
You know, 4 months later. So it worked out. So, you know, never stop the negotiation when they can't afford the price. Just figure out what their pain point is. You know, maybe they're raising money and they don't have it all now, but if they secure the name, then it helps them in their raise. So, you know, you can sell them the name and you keep control of it, right? Because the payment plan. And so they don't get any control until they paid it off. You can take cash, payments, and equity. I've done all three of those in the same deal. You take an equity piece. One of the things I do when there's an equity piece is I have a clawback clause so that if they don't raise money, if they go to business, you know, if they go insolvent, you don't want the name to then disappear,
right,
with the assets of that company. And so if I say that if it goes insolvent, then the name comes back to me. If you have that written in the agreement, then there's no question on whose asset it is, right, when they liquidate their assets. And so it's a little bit safer for you, and no one's ever pushed back on that, right? When you're negotiating it, you're like, look, if you go out of business, I want my name back. And I go, okay, well, fine.
Yeah. We're never going out of business, so it doesn't matter.
Right. And also it's kind of an easy ask up front.
Right.
And they're also less concerned, you know, distributing those funds. And your position is, look, if you go out of business, then I'm not getting paid all the money that you promised me, right? The equity piece, right? The payment plan, all these things they're not going to happen. Certainly not the equity. So I want my asset back. and they agree to it. So I always talk about clawback clauses. This is not the first time I've done that.
Yeah.
So yeah. Listeners out there, sorry if you heard this.
So I think you're so good at establishing rapport with your clients that it's just effortless and natural for you. But I think for a lot of domainers who aren't maybe good negotiators or are new to negotiation, they don't really know how to establish that rapport in the beginning when someone just comes with a price, they come with an offer. Their tendency is to have a knee-jerk reaction of a counteroffer right away, and then it just becomes about a number back and forth. So what are any tips and tricks on how to establish a rapport in a conversation and get honest responses from your client about their pain points, about their budget, and so on?
Yeah, I think you need to have a conversation to determine what their pain points are and what their goals are. You know, are they raising money? They don't have a lot of cash now, but they're trying to raise money. They've got investors lined up. They need this to help raise the money. You know, there are a lot of ways for them to secure the asset and start using it. I mean, look, you could tell them, I'll point the domain to your website. And, you know, your first payment is not for 30 days, not for 60 days. Now you've solved that problem, right?
Right.
I had a guy that was buying a name, and I don't know why, but he was launching this business. He wanted this particular name. He was flying to Zurich or something the next day to give a big presentation and wanted to use this name for his company, and he didn't own it.
Right.
And I said, I've just pointed the name to your website. Type it in. The guy was over the moon, right? I mean, all I did was go in and change the DNS, right? But I did it while we were on the phone. Right. And guy, he's like, oh my God, thank you. I said, all right, you know, this is what you're going to owe me, but I just want to make sure that we've got your set.
Right.
Because he was literally at the airport talking to me, getting on the plane to fly to Zurich. I mean, this is why he didn't think about this before. I have no idea. But I said, look, go give your presentation. Don't worry about it. Right. And he's like, no, I want to pay you. And he ended up just giving me his credit card. And so it all worked out. But the point is, I was like, here, I just pointed, go give your presentation. And because what's going to happen the next day? He just gave his presentation using my domain name. What's he going to do? He has to buy it from me. Right. Now he's locked in. Right. But it solves his problem.
Yeah.
Right.
But you also,
and what
you
did
also,
that cost me? Nothing.
Right.
So,
right away, you gained a lot of goodwill and trust when you did
100%.
That.
100%. I gave up no control.
Yeah.
And I've done that a number of times. I'm like, yeah, let me just point it, and then let's keep sorting it out. That way, you can now talk to your investors and use this name, and that they see that you've got control over, but you don't, right?
Right.
So that helps a lot. That sort of thing. Yeah, so determining a pain point, determining what their goals are, what their needs are. You know, maybe they don't have much money now. Maybe they can give you 10 grand. I've sold options on names where, all right, look, you give me $10,000 and that's going to be an option. And now you have an option to buy this name at X, and you have a year. And that's it. They don't have any money now, but I'm going to take this off the market for the next 12 months. For a $10,000 fee, and it's not going towards the purchase price. That's the cost of the option. I've done that.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you have to kind of weigh the risk reward there, because there are opportunity costs of doing that.
Right.
But so there are a number of ways to solve the price option, whether it's a lease, whether it's financing, whether it's, you know, a certain amount of time for free. And you just, you know, point the DNS and you maintain control, balloon payments, all kinds of stuff.
So how do you advertise your domains? Do you have landing pages?
Yeah, at the moment I'm using Uni. I like their CRM. We'll see what happens with the transition over to GoDaddy. I'm not promising that I'm going to stay, Epic has come up with some good landers. The CRM is not, I'm not thrilled with the CRM yet, but they're working on it. But I do like their SSL landers, and you know, FT's got good landers, Dan's got good landers. But at the moment I'm at uni. I'm not thrilled with their landers. It's the CRM that I like. And the fact that I've got, like 5,500 or 6,000 inquiries in there, and I want to move all that data somewhere.
Okay.
I don't want to lose it.
And you've told me in the past that you're also a big proponent of bins, even for these generic dictionary word domains that are priced at 1.2 million. You'll put a bin on the page, right?
I do. I'm trying to remember if I've had any six-figure bins. I don't think I have. Not that I've actually gone through. But I sold loveletter.com on a bin for $35,000 a while ago, and which would definitely be my price today, but at the time I would have taken less. And right. Somebody just, you know, hit buy it now one night. I woke up in the morning and it was sold. So I can kind of look at my sales and tell you if there's any others. So I do like that. DearMom.com sold for $10,000 on a buy it now. Pleased.com sold for $40,000 buy it now. That was this year, last year. There's Love Letter last year for $35,000 buy it now. Divorcelawyers.net is buy it now. It happens. It just depends on, it's a budget thing. So it could be a big company and $35,000 or $50,000 or whatever it is not meaningful for them. And so they'll just do it buy now. Some don't realize that they could reach out and negotiate. I also like it because it kind of sets expectations.
Right.
So if you're anchoring, so let me use Recognize as an example. So this particular buyer is extremely wealthy, and he's a billionaire, and I know the guy, and so I'm glad that I had it priced, because when he reached out, if I had not had it priced and I told him $1.2 million, he would have been pissed at me, because he would have thought that I simply jacked up the price because I know how much money he has.
Exactly.
And so I remember thinking, thank God I had this one priced, because he just wouldn't have believed me. And who knows, maybe that sale never would have happened because he thought I was trying to screw him. So it does set expectations by anchoring it at a high number. Also, it gets rid of the tire kickers. I also don't price it at, three times what I would take, because that's kind of a waste.
Right.
I do leave margin in there for commissions, right? Because if they click buy it now, then I'm going to lose a small percentage to the platform.
Right.
So there is that cushion in there. And that serves a couple of purposes. One, it covers the commissions, and two, I've got this public facing price on it. And now when someone reaches out to me, I can use that as a reference. Well, I've got a price at $35,000. So, that's my price. Well, how about 20? Right. And then I can kind of negotiate from that 35, and I've already got buffer in there anyway. So it helps there too when negotiating.
Now, other domain investors like the make offer option, because what I've heard they're thinking is, well, I don't know what my potential buyer's budget could be. It could be a very large corporation. They could be willing to pay a huge, a huge amount for this domain. And by putting a bin on there, I may be limiting the amount of money I could get for that domain. I'm sure you've heard that before.
Yeah. No, for sure. There is a possibility that you're leaving money on the table. But on the other hand, there's an equal possibility that you could have sold a name for more. If Love Letter, using that example, $35,000, I paid $1,000 for that name, $1,000. Like, I would have sold that for $10,000. And I had it, I mean, I had kind of ratcheted up the price over the years that I had it because I thought it was worth more. And literally today I would price it even higher just because the market has gone up. But, you know, if they had reached out to me with a $15,000 offer, I might have countered at 25 or something. But I had it listed at 35. There was no discussion. They pulled the trigger. It might have gone a different direction for me if they reached out with a lower offer. So I think there are sales that you do make with Buy It Now that you wouldn't have otherwise have made. Last year I sold divorcelawyers.net, Buy It Now at Uniregistry, $9,750. And I remember seeing that sale and I was like, that seems awfully low. Like, why would I price it that low? And I looked it up. I had bought it the year prior for $500. And then I recall the thinking, it was, you know what? I got this so cheap for $500. I'm going to put a low price on it and it'll motivate someone to pull the trigger on it. And it's exactly what happened. Because if I would have sold that for $5,000, that would have been a decent return. I would have got 10X. I would have been happy with that. But the fact is I got almost 10, but I was able to price it at a number that was still decent. I could have priced it higher because that's a pretty good legal name, even though it's a .net. But some lawyer happened upon it, was like, you know what, for $9,700, I'll just do it. So I think that and if it wasn't priced, who knows? You know, the offer probably would have been $250, right? As most offers are.
Yep.
So, you know, pricing it also, you know, cuts out that back and forth. If I just have a make offer, then, you know, everything's going to be $100 and I'm going to be spinning my wheels. And I don't want to do that.
So for you, any potential money left on the table is outweighed by the advantages of getting rid of the lowball offers and getting Buy It Now impulse purchases and also setting expectations for negotiations.
All those things. And, yeah. And potentially there's money left on the table on a deal, right?
Right.
But then how many deals happen that wouldn't have happened because they're priced and somebody says, oh, divorcelawyer.net for $9,700. Yeah, I'll do that. And they pull the trigger as they're looking through names and stop them from looking.
Right.
And maybe he would have bought something else for less or for more or who knows, but he stopped because, you know, maybe he would have anticipated that would have been higher priced, or maybe he anticipated that it wouldn't have been found at all. That wasn't available for purchase. So I think it helps people pull the trigger as well.
Yep.
Right. So there's both sides of that. Maybe there's money left on the table, but maybe there's sales that wouldn't have happened at all.
I think for domainers, when they put make offer on a domain name on their landing page, and this is particularly for, I'm talking lower price domains, you know, domains that are like brandables that would normally sell in the $2,000, $3,000, $5,000, $10,000 range. They're putting make offer on the page. And I think their motivation is fear of missing out, really. It's just a fear-based decision that, oh, gee, if I price it at $2,500 or $5,000, you know, what if I could have gotten more? What if, you know, Google stops by? And I think it's really lame thinking, personally.
Yeah, I think it's a little short-sighted because they're missing out, especially at that lower end, especially at that $2,500 And we understand that a decent brandable, pronounceable, is worth $2,500 to $3,500. We know those statistics. The buyer has no clue. The buyer thinks the domain is $10. And I can't tell you how many times, I tell somebody it's a $350,000 name, and they're like, what? I wouldn't pay more than $10 or $15. Somebody literally said their range was $12 to $17 on a name that I wanted six figures for. It's like, obviously that was the end of the discussion. But that's because that person, that's when they looked up names, that's what the range was that they found on GoDaddy or wherever, right? For whether it was a .com or whatever extension, like that's the range to register a domain name. So that's what's in that person's mind. They don't think that a onemore.com is hundreds of thousands of dollars. Never crosses their mind, right? So we have to educate a lot. Although, how much time do I want to spend educating somebody that just wants to start a blog and clearly doesn't have a budget, right? I'm not going to spend a lot of time. Now, the person that just reached out to me for schematic.com is a VC, like has a fund, has raised tons and tons, many, many millions of dollars for the fund. $10,000 offer. I'm not gonna sell $10,000. That doesn't make less than what I paid for it, right? But he doesn't understand the value of OneWord.coms. Didn't recognize that they're going to be in that range. Clearly willing to spend some money. I mean, $10,000 is still a lot of money, right? For a domain name, which is to him kind of a throwaway advertising thing, probably. I did spend a little time educating him, and I said, there's no such animal as a $10,000 oneword.com. He didn't know, we had a very nice back and forth. Chances are he'll never pull the trigger, but maybe he does some more research and discovers I'm not bullshitting him, and that's really what they're worth. And he will step up. I don't know, but I didn't blow him off because it was a real buyer with a real budget, right? I mean, I consider someone that comes up with $10,000 for a domain name serious buyer. Maybe not for my particular domain, but just a serious buyer, right?
Yeah.
So that's how I handle those conversations. And so, the last email with him was, which literally was yesterday, was, look, if things change, if you want to talk about a lease or finance plan, or if things change, feel free to reach out. Right. So I kind of leave that door open. And who knows? And I have had companies come back.
Do you get many repeat purchases? You have that one guy, but any others?
Just that one guy. I mean, I was doing, which is a coincidence, because I was doing acquisitions for him for years, for his previous company. And then some, for him personally. And then he coincidentally was reaching out about a bunch of names, and his top choice, actually, he narrowed it down to like five names, and three of them were mine. Two or three were mine. And then narrowed it down to the top two, and those top two were mine, which is a total coincidence, because he had come up with a list of words that he liked, and recognize.com and configure.com were his two top choices. It's just a coincidence that they're mine, because I never sent him a list or anything. He just reached out independently each name.
Do you get referrals, maybe?
Do I get referrals?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other customers and clients?
For acquisitions.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, sometimes somebody reach out to me, hey, my friend said that you know domains and you have a bunch and I'm looking for XYZ, but typically those budgets aren't very high. But when they're... you know, when they say I'm looking for a good name, what do you have? That's never panned out. Right. Although I've gotten referrals where they want a specific name, and so-and-so said that you might be able to help me. In which case I do, just because it's fun for me. I don't mind doing, you know, a favor for somebody. And I've done acquisitions. Some I've pulled off and some, you know, I haven't. There was a name I was trying to get about 2 months ago. Turns out it was owned by a $26 billion market cap company. But I did get all the right people, and I could not get them to shake it loose, unfortunately. Came very, very close, actually. But then I was able to get the guy his second choice. I can't remember. I mean, I don't think I made much money. I mean, I would have made good money on the first one. It was a oneword.com.
Right.
It was a six-figure buy. And then I ended up getting him one for like, $2,500 or $2,800 or something like that. I don't remember what it was, but, I made a little bit of money,
for your time,
for my time. But I mean, it certainly wasn't
right.
The amount of time I put into the overall deal, it wasn't worthwhile, but you know, I did the guy a favor and he was very happy, and you know, I might be able to still get him that oneword.com, and it's fine. You know, I made a few bucks, like $600 or something. But you know, typically when I try to do an acquisition, you know, it doesn't happen at all because they come to me after they were not able to get it.
Right.
Right. So then I got to go in and try to convince them or get all the right person or something. So.
Yeah. They've already experimented.
That's not my area of expertise. I know how. It's easier when I reach out with my law firm email address, because the sellers take that more seriously. I email their general counsel.
That always right. Works. That's your doorway.
Yeah.
Hey. Speaking of nice domain, six-figure domain sales, yesterday the domain confirm.com sold for $108,000.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on that one?
So I had considered buying that name. The asking price was $135. I thought that was a little high. I would have liked it. I would have pulled the trigger if it was in the mid to high five figures. I've made a lot of purchases lately, and I've got two in the works right now, and so you know they really have to be good names for me to spend six figures.
Right.
108 is a decent price for Confirm. Decent. It's not a steal, but it's decent. You know, Brent Oxley bought it. You know, he can afford it, right? And the fact is he'll turn that name for $500,000 at some point. And right. That's a great return. So, I'd say, I think it's a good purchase. It wasn't a steal, but it was a very fair price. If an end user had bought it, they would have gotten a great, you know, that would have been a steal for them. But from a wholesale perspective, not a steal, but fair.
Fair price.
Little what high. Ask me again in 3 years, I'll tell you got a great deal.
And what would you see that name being used for?
You want to close a deal? You want to confirm a deal? Confirm, verify. To me, it sounds like something is confirmed. It is secure.
Right.
Right.
So it could be something in finance and banking. Could even be a Bitcoin name, maybe.
It could be crypto. It's fintech. It's cybersecurity.
Yeah.
It's a good cybersecurity name.
Yeah.
And it's a two syllable,
very recognizable, positive name. Yeah, I think so.
Everybody knows how to say it and spell it.
Yeah, right.
Which is becoming really, really important now. I mean, it's always been important, but it's even more important now because we have so much voice recognition with Alexa and Siri and all these bots that are coming into the home and the workplace, and people are not typing in much anymore.
Less so, yes. Of course, does not mean that domains are going down in value. It's the opposite. But because you still need a word and you still need to advertise it and print it and run commercials and billboards and everything else and emails, you know, email addresses are still based on that. But
the podcast test becomes more important, maybe. What do you think?
Yeah, if it becomes complicated, what drives me crazy are misspelled words. You know, these companies, Lyft is an example. And look, they got over that hump, obviously. But, you know, how many millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars did they have to spend to let the general public know that Lyft is not L-I-F-T?
Right.
Coupons.com just sold last week with a K. And several companies are called Coupons with a K. It's dumb. So they have to get over that hurdle. Now, certainly it was a lot cheaper. Siger sold carpool.com with a K.
Right.
And hopefully that company grows and does extremely well, because then they're going to come back to me and buy Carpool spelled correctly, which I own. But you know, you're 100% right in that, all of those companies that use misspelled names, I cannot rely on, voice access, right? Access on the internet using voice. Voice can't email them. Voice can't access their website. Voice can't, order their product on Amazon. Nothing, because they're spelled incorrectly. Even typing it in. I mean, we have autocorrect, we have autocomplete, and you know, you type in an email, it's going to autocorrect. You type it in your browser, it's going to autocomplete and going to correct the spelling. You have to fight Google.
Right.
Fight Google. Why do you want to fight Google? We already are fighting Google just to get rankings. You're going to fight Google just in the spelling of your name?
Yeah.
Terrible idea.
Yeah. Terrible. It's true.
I mean, I look, there's certainly an argument for you get the word and the meaning is conveyed and it's a small sliver fraction of the price. Okay. I get that, but you have all these other massive hurdles. I just don't get it with these. You know, we talk about hard to spell words, and then people buy purposely misspelled words. Terrible idea.
Doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't. It really doesn't. I have an inquiry today. It's a four-letter. Well, I guess I could tell you what it is. So it's rstr.com. So, you know, during the four letter boom, I bought a couple of dozen of them, and you know, good letters, right? But it's pronounceable as rooster.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I've had a couple of inquiries because of rooster. It's not why I bought it at the time. But I don't know. I think it's dumb. Like, why do you want to be rooster with no vowels? Then you have to explain to everybody what it is. You can't just say go to rooster.com. And the same with hacks. Hacks are terrible too. Hyphens. Hyphens work for your rankings, and that's fine if that's all you're going for. But you know, if you're carpool. And you say your name, you're telling somebody, go check out our site, car-pool.com. Like, that becomes your name. Dash, like, you have to use the word dash or the word hyphen. I think that's a terrible idea. If you look at the hacks like Delicious, well, you and I as domainers know that's a .us name, right?
Right.
Where's the other dot in the subdomain?
Not to mention that delicious, like, I don't know how to spell delicious.
Right.
Right. But I mean, I think a DEL dot, I think. Right. But back then when delicious was launched, I think the newer domainers aren't going to even know what delicious is. But when delicious launched, you know, it was a clever hack by some computer geek, right? That thought it was cute. Except with that, when it grew, nobody knew what the hell that was, right? They didn't know where the dots were. They didn't know about a .us. And so eventually they had to get delicious.com. And the same with Bitly, bit.ly. Nobody knew right. at the time that .ly existed. And frankly, today people still don't know about .ly, which, side note, I still have the record for the highest selling .ly ever.
Oh, what one is that?
Local.ly for 125,000.
Nice name.
Many years ago. Yeah. So Bitly, you know, is a shortener, still around. But nobody knew, everybody typed in bit.ly.com because they didn't know there was a .ly. And so eventually they had to go acquire .bit.ly.com, right? Because people were misspelling it. They were losing too much traffic, too much leakage. So if you have a hack, if you have a clever spelling or not so clever spelling with a K instead of a C or leaving out the vowels, you're going to lose traffic to the name that's spelled correctly, or that isn't the hack.
Yeah, the one that's a .com or that's spelled correctly.
Just like we lose traffic to, you know, the .co loses traffic to the .com, and the .io is going to lose traffic. Everything is going to lose traffic to a .com, right? Every other extent.
Right.
But again, you know, domains are budget driven. So do you want to spend the money on the name, or do you want to spend the money on your marketing trying to get the public to understand what your name is?
And oftentimes they prefer to spend it on marketing because that's more traditional. It's something they're used to. It's just, you know, it's more familiar for many companies, right?
Yes, but it's short-sighted.
It's short-sighted, yeah. Well, hopefully that's changing.
Start with a name that people can spell. Start with a name that Google isn't going to try to correct. You're going to save money by spending more upfront.
Right.
I mean, and look, it's the same argument for buy a short, memorable, easy to remember, that's redundant, a short, memorable, easy to spell name, right? The longer the name is, the weirder the extension is, you know, the harder it is for people to remember, harder it'll be for the general public, your customer, to remember your name. Right. And that, I mean, that kind of goes for everything, even beyond domain names, right? You don't walk past a mall store that's got some long, crazy name. People aren't going to remember it. Not that anybody walks through a mall nowadays.
Mall? What's that? What's a mall?
Right. Well, boys and girls, it used to be a place where we would shop. We would buy things there.
In closing, is there anything that you want to promote or say, or any final words of wisdom? Or, oh, by the way, before we close, there's two more things. One is, I'm taking the mic back. One is, I just want to commend you and Josh Reason for a fantastic podcast and platform where you guys have really done a lot of great work and a great service for the domaining community. A lot of knowledge and information has come out by virtue of Josh's platform and his podcast, which everyone should check out if they haven't already, at josh.co. And I want to commend you for the time that you've, you know, contributed to, I know he's your buddy, Josh, anyway, but you've spent a lot of time there and given a lot of knowledge and information. And so thanks for that.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And I mean that. I like talking about domain name. So, you know, happy to have the opportunity to have these conversations, and you as well. I mean, you're certainly providing a service to the community. I think all the bloggers have to have their own little niche, and the niche that you've carved out for yourself, I think is super, super helpful for the community, because everyone has to enter somewhere, and they enter at the kind of the lower end, and that's what you talk about. And you really break it down, you know, what are the roots, the root words, you know, what alliteration, what, you know, what spellings, you know, you really break down what it is that people should be looking for in a name and how to find those deals. I think that's really, really helpful for people. So,
great.
So thank you for doing what you do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll accept that. Thanks for the commendation.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's super helpful. I think people like hearing about six figure and seven figure sales because it's interesting, but that's not where they're going to invest. To say, you know, this oneword.com is a good buy because of, like, confirm.com. Well, here are the reasons, you know, these industries, I think it would go. And I think that's interesting. I think it's good for people to know that, but that doesn't mean that you're going to go pull the trigger on a six figure name like Confirm. But what you talk about and how it applies to a name that they can pick up at closeouts for $17, I think that's much more actionable and useful for the audience.
Good. Good. Well, thanks for
spending the time doing that.
Yeah, you're welcome. And thanks for appreciating what I do. And like you, I do it mainly because I enjoy it. And I also learn from it too. I find that speaking out my ideas and writing about my ideas and about topics helps me to consolidate my thinking and to learn and become a better investor myself. So it's good for me as well, you know?
Yeah. Well, when you want to learn something, you teach it, right? You know, look at Mike Seiger, who of course everybody knows now, but I mean, I remember when Mike got into the industry and he started Domain Sherpa, and he's a guy who educates, right? I mean, that's what he did before with Six Sigma. And so he decided that he's just going to interview all the experts, and he was the first blog. So he interviewed all of us, you know, Frank and all the, you know, the original guys. And I did a bunch of them back in the beginning. And now, right, so he learned everything there was to learn back then and started investing himself, right? Because he wasn't an investor back then. Now he's got a nice small but you know, nice portfolio. And DN Academy is by far the best education you can getting into the domain space.
For sure.
Like there's nothing, it's just unrivaled. And he was able to put that together, not just because of his background, but because he spent time asking the questions of all of the experts in the field.
Yeah.
And he leveraged that to be able to invest himself and to be able to put a course together. He distilled down what we were all talking about. He said, this is what you need to know to get into domain investing.
Yeah.
So for those listeners out there who have not gone through the DN Academy course, this is a free plug for Mike. Sign up for DN Academy.
Yeah, and I'm totally on board with you. I anytime anyone asks me, what can I do, you know, to further my understanding of the industry and really get in here and start making some money, I say, don't buy any domains. Just sign up for DN Academy before you spend any money. And it'll just save you so much time and so much money to take the course. And rather than learning from mistakes, just learn it first up, you know?
It's got so much content. I think it's $399, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think so.
And I promise you that if you get into domaining without learning first, you're going to lose more than $399.
Way more.
I guarantee, even if you decide to hand register a bunch of names, you're going to go on a bender. Like, you're going to open a bottle of wine and you're going to register a bunch of names. You're going to register more than 40 of them, and you're going to drop them all next year.
Yeah.
Hopefully you're going to drop them next year, or you're going to drop them the year after. And so you're going to spend $800. This is what, I mean, look, it's a rite of passage. We all buy names that are worthless, or we end up selling for less than what we paid because we didn't know what we were doing. Myself included, we've all done it, and you almost have to. And the best way to prevent losing too much money doing that is going through this course, DN Academy.
Okay, folks, I've got a news flash for you. For a limited time only, all my listeners are eligible for a $100 discount on the DN Academy course. So right now, you can enroll in the DN Academy course for only $299. That's $100 off the usual price of $399. All you have to do to get the discount is go to dnacademy.com/brandableinsider and fill out the form. This is a limited time offer that's exclusive for you as a Brandable Insider podcast listener. Again, the place to go for the discount is dnacademy.com/brandableinsider and just fill out the form and the $100 discount will be automatically applied to your total. Hey, one other thing I want to plug before we go. Yeah. Is the ICA. You and I are both members of the Internet Commerce Association, and it's a fantastic organization. And I want to also plug that today, too. Tell us about the ICA.
The ICA, that's the only voice that we have to protect our investment. That's what it comes down to. So who is it that's out there representing us? Well, it's the ICA. Zach is a lawyer with ICA, and they appeal to ICANN, and they try to even the playing field. And that's important. And it takes money to pay the lawyers and to write legislation and to fight against all of the attorneys that want to represent just the trademark owners and not the domain investors. All the cool kids are doing it. If you make your living or make a nice side hustle by investing in domain names, you should be giving back a little bit, and you should be helping protect our income stream.
Yeah. I agree. And folks can find out more information by going to internetcommerce.org. All right. Well, Braden, you are the man. Thanks so much for, you know, reaching out today and reaching out to me initially for the interview. It was your idea, and I'm glad you had it. And I had a great time, and you know, thanks for coming around and sharing all your amazing knowledge and experience with my listeners.
Happy to do it. Thanks for having me on.
Well, that completes this episode of the Brandable Insider Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. Till next time, this is Keith DeBoer saying, may all your sales be to end users.